And in this verse number 47, Krishna spoke about the formula or the what we call the system of karma yoga. What exactly is karma yoga? And he defined it in four sentences in verse 47. The first thing he said is karma eva adhikaraste, chapter 2 verse 47, meaning karma or action is your right. It is, you have absolute right to choose the type of action you want to do. So that freedom is in your hands. Meaning, as a human being, you have been given the greatest gift by God, and that is free will. To choose which direction you want to go, to choose everything in your life, you have the free will, the freedom to do so. But since action also has a result, Krishna says about the result in line number 2, ma paleshu kadachana. When it comes to the result, phala or the fruit or the result of your action, you have no total freedom. You have some choice on your result, but you don't have 100% choice what happens as a result of your action. And we can all understand this, because whatever action we do, there are so many factors. There is an environment, there are other people involved who can change the course of your action. And the equipment that you're using to perform an action, the equipment can be faulty. So there are so many factors that can affect the outcome of your action. So two factors we know now. One is you have freedom to choose your action, but you have no freedom to choose the result of your action. Knowing these two factors, Krishna says in the third line, ma karma phala hetu bhur. You should never, never let the result of your action be the motivating factor of your action. Why is that? Why should you not let the result determine should I do this or should I not do this? The result should not determine it. Why is that? Or the outcome should not determine your action. Why is that?
The outcome is the fruit.
The fruit. You should never let, that means you shouldn't think of the result, and because the result is in your favor, then you do the action. Why is that? Obviously, if the result is not in your favor, you won't do it. So if you look at the result and you think, yes, this is favorable, I'll do it. So why should we not look at the result and then decide on the action? Correct, but why
no
should
guarantee anyway?
Correct. So because of the line 2, what does Krishna say? You have no freedom to decide on the result of your action. You cannot determine 100% what is going to happen. So if the result is not the determining factor, what should be the determining factor? Why should I do the action?
It's a duty,
it's the right action, it is my duty to do, it's my dharma. That should decide whether I should do the action. Right, for example, we take a simple thing like giving charity. If we look at it and look at the result, if I give charity, do I gain or lose? Do I gain or lose?
Physically,
you lose, right? Is there any benefit to you giving charity?
Yes.
Depends on how you look at the benefit.
I'm looking at the returns. Do I get anything? If I go and give charity, do I get anything back?
No.
Maximum you'll get thank you very much, and on receipt you'll get. Isn't it? So if I look at that, if I'm not going to get a benefit, then why should I do charity? If you just look at one simple thing. So the same philosophy if I apply in life, why do I give charity? Because it is my duty to help others, isn't it? So it is my duty, I do it, full stop. I don't say it is I have to do, but what will I get, what will I gain? I don't look beyond that. I say it is my duty, I do it. Similarly, if we also have that same approach to life, to everything that we are doing in the world, even spiritual actions, if I go to temple and pray, I say, if God, you're not going to listen to my prayers, I'm not going to come to temple. Is that the right attitude? No. So why do I go to temple and pray? Because I love God, I want to go there and worship Him. So I don't look for the result. Whether God answers my prayers or doesn't answer my prayer, I still want to go to temple and pray. Take that same philosophy and apply it to everything in your life. Whether you're looking after your family, whether you're looking after your elder parents, whether you're looking after children, whether you're serving in the office, we don't look at the result. We do it because it's our duty. And therefore, in the fourth line also, Krishna says, if you take the attitude, and since some people might say, if I should not bother about the result, then why even do the action? Forget about the action. So he says in the last line, Ma te sango stya karmani. Do not be attached to inaction also. Do not give up the duties, thinking that if I do also, since I am not going to look at the result, then why even do also? Why it does not matter whether I do or don't do. So I give up even the action. Why should we not give up action? By doing action with the right attitude, what is happening? If I do all my actions with the right attitude, then every action is surrendered to God. What happens?
Mind gets purified.
So if I don't do action, where is the purification of the mind going to come? So by giving up actions, I am not benefiting myself also. It is by doing actions with the right attitude that I am getting spiritual upliftment. That is why we must be very careful. There is a big purpose or right purpose in us doing our actions. Actions don't cause our agitation. What is it that causes agitation is your attitude to action. So what should you correct? Not the action, but the attitude. And when you correct your attitude to action, the result is purification of mind. So by all means, do not abandon your duty, don't abandon your actions. Don't be attached to inaction. That's what he's saying at the fourth line. So here he started to explain about the philosophy of Karma Yoga. You can feel the mosquitoes already here. You feel it, right? Yeah. Okay. So in the next verse, also 48, he carries on the explaining about this Karma Yoga philosophy until verse number 50. Okay, what else does he say about Karma Yoga philosophy here? First word here we look at is Yogastha. Yogastha means, staha means to be established. To be firmly established, meaning follow the philosophy which is given to you in verse number 47. Understand that philosophy and apply it. Kuru karmani. Kuru means you undertake karmani, and look at the word karmani, it is not in singular, it is in plural, which means all your actions. This philosophy must be applied in every action that you do. It is not only when you go and pray that you apply Karma Yoga philosophy. It is not only when you go give charity you apply this Karma Yoga philosophy. You must apply this in all your transactions, in all your duties that you do. So you must be firmly established with this philosophy of Karma Yoga. Yogastha means apply this attitude diligently in all your actions. So don't waver from this. If you want to see the inner purification, don't waver from it. And what else he says in the second line, Sangam Tyaktva. Tyaktva means to renounce. Sangha means attachment. The most important key is to renounce our attachment. And what do we mean by renounce attachment? When we undertake any action, do you get the result or not? If you work in a job, at the end of the month, you get the salary. So what are you supposed to be detached from? Can you say at the end of the month, somebody gives you salary? No, I am detached, you keep the salary. No, we want the salary. We work for the salary. So what is this detachment? What do you mean by this detachment? What are we supposed to be detached from? How can you be detached from the result when you are actually getting the result? Isn't it? The result will come to you. Whatever you do, you give charity also, somebody comes and thanks you. You get the result. So what does it mean by being detached? Don't get carried away by the result. That is what we mean by detached. The result should not affect you. If it is favorable, or whether if it's favorable, you should not get carried away. If it is unfavorable, you should not get dejected. So that means what happens to your state of mind now? It is in a state of equilibrium. There is no disturbance to your mind. You do the action without attachment, your mind is in a state of equilibrium. Because the result does not affect you at all. So, detachment, another word for detachment is absence of reaction. There is no reaction. Your mind accepts favorable, your mind accepts unfavorable also. Right? So that is what is meant by what you call attitude of detachment. Sangam tyaktva, renounce the attachment. It is not on physical, it is but at the mental level. Because where does action disturb us? Not on the physical level. Where do we get disturbed? Mental level. So what we have to take care is what is the status or situation of our mind. Throughout the Bhagavad Gita, everything, the emphasis is on how you are able to control your mind. So, two things, normally any action that we undertake, there are two, what we call two components to the action. Normally every action that we do, number one, there is always a desire for success. Nobody undertakes an action to get an unsuccessful result, right? So first thing is, any action that we undertake, there is always a desire for success. The second thing is, there is always behind our mind a fear of failure. While we desire success, there is also always a fear of failure. Everything, whatever we undertake, even when you're cooking a dish for your family, isn't it? Supposing you have been cooking for 10-15 years, then you decide to try a new dish. Then what happens in your mind? How will it turn out? Will they like it? Will my husband like it? Will my children like it? You know, will it turn out tasty? There's always, you want it to be good. And there is still always that fear that it will turn out the wrong way. So now, what is it that is troubling you now? While you're doing the action, what is it that is troubling you now? The action or the result? The result. That means what he's saying here. Remove that desire for success. Remove the fear of failure. What else is left? Then comes equanimity. Then you concentrate. You move away your focus from the desire for success. Surrender that to God. Fear of failure. Surrender that to God. It is all in your hands. When you remove, when you take your mind away from that and fix your mind on God, then where is the disturbance going to come from? There is nothing that can disturb your mind. So this is not just a theory. It must be put into practice. If you can, while you are doing action, shift your mind away from the result, shift it to the action, concentrate on the action, surrender mentally the result to God, you will see your own mind, how calm and how peaceful is your mind. Find joy in the action. As you are doing your action, you are not finding joy in the action. You keep on thinking and thinking and thinking about the result. As a result, there is no joy at all in the action. So here he says that it is your attitude that you have to change. So karma yoga is an attitude to move your mind away from success and failure of action, move it to the action itself. And here we must understand the difference between goal and result. What is the difference between goal and result? Should we not have goals? If you say, forget about the result, should I not have goals? So what is the difference between goal and result?
Goal is something that you plan.
Right. So goal is something that you plan, which is in your control. Result is something which comes after the action, but it is not in your control. Goal is in your control, you can plan it, but result you cannot plan. And goal comes before the action, result comes after the action. Therefore, planning makes you efficient, worrying makes you deficient or inefficient. See, it is not the goal is wrong. Have the goal, make your plan, and then when you talk about result that comes after the action, instead of worrying about the result, that worry you surrender to God. So I have a goal, I know what I want to do, I have a plan how I want to achieve the goal, and then what I do, I concentrate on the action. The result is what I have to surrender to God. Because why? Why do I surrender the result to God?
Your mind will be at peace, not disturbed.
Yeah, so why should I? Karman evadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Because the result is never totally in my control. We must understand that factor very clearly. When we feel that we are in control of everything, that is the ego. That is actually your ego telling you, I am in control, I will determine everything, I can do this, I can do that. There are a lot of factors that can influence your action. So understand that and surrender the results. So we must understand the difference between goals and result. Okay, what else does he say? Siddhi, siddhya, asiddhyo. So there are two words here. Siddhi means success. Asiddhi means failure. So you can replace this success and failure with all kinds of opposites in your life. There can be victory, there can be defeat, there can be health, there can be sickness, there can be profit, there can be loss. There are all kinds of what we call dwandvas or dualities. So here when he says siddhi asiddha, what he is saying, samo bhutva. Samo bhutva means learn to handle success and failure with an equanimous mind. And we can only do that when we surrender the results to God. We accept everything that comes. Now, how do we accept, how do we have this samobhutva, how do we have this equanimous attitude if we just take a look at how we do our prayers? How do you define worship to God? What is your definition? What do you mean by worship to God? How would you define it? When we worship God, what is your definition? How do you define worship?
You look upon the Supreme, you pray to the Supreme to just give us the grace.
Okay.
Where
is your mind? Simply, if I'm sitting in front of the altar, I'm offering flowers to God, and my mind is in Switzerland. Is that prayer? No. Or I could be eating my food, and while I'm eating, my mind is on God. Which is prayer? Huh? They're praying, sitting on the altar or eating my food? Eating my food becomes a prayer. Why? Because mind is on God. So the definition of prayer is, where is your mind? Not physically where you are. You can be in a temple holding your hands like this, but your mind can be roaming all over the world. That is not prayer. So if we take the same attitude, that, how do I keep my mind equanimous? When we offer a prayer to God, or we offer the flower to God, similarly, my actions are the invisible flower that I offer to God. And where is this God? Where is this God? Inside, and where else?
Everywhere,
isn't it? So that means you can offer your action to God anywhere. While you're sitting in the office, I also offer my action to you. Why? Because God is all-pervading, God is everywhere. So my action is the flower which I offer to God, the invisible flower which I offer to God. And when we offer anything to the feet of the Lord, just like when we bow down and touch the feet of our elders, what do? They bless you, right? So when you offer everything to the feet of the Lord blesses you. Now what is this blessing? What do we mean by this blessing? How does He bless you with His grace?
Tatastu.
Tatastu means may you be blessed, right? That's what the gurus normally bless you. Tatastu. May you be blessed. See, the action we are offering to God, right, at the feet of God, what comes after the action? Result. So the blessing of God with His hand is the result. Isn't it? You have offered everything to feet of God. God blesses you with His hand. That is the result. Now, take the same thing as a prayer we do. When we offer the flower to the altar of God, what do we take back from the altar? Prasadam. So every result is accepted as a prasadam. Good also is prasadam. Bad also is prasadam. So attitude of karma yogi is, I don't say this is favorable, this is not favorable, this is okay, this I like, this I don't like. What should I use? Just one simple word for the result. Ishvara prasadam. That's how my mind becomes samobhutva. My actions become an offering, every result I accept as a prasadam. I may cook a dish and the dish may turn out to be totally horrible. So, if I allow my mind to be disturbed, then it is not going to help me at all. But I leave it to God. Whatever the dish comes out, I accept it. Right? So, to maintain that samobhutva, we must understand that this whole cycle of karma is like that. Every action is being offered to feet of Lord. Every action that we do is going into the law of karma. Every result is coming back from God as the law of karma. This is the whole cycle of the law of karma. Every action goes to God, every result comes back from God. Whether it is favorable or unfavorable, because it comes from God, I look upon it as prasadam. Samo bhutva, that is the attitude of what we all should accept as a karma yogi. So how does Krishna define this in the last line of verse 48? He gives the name to karma yoga, samatvam yoga uchate. Yoga uchate means it is defined as samatvam, equanimity. Equanimity of what? Equanimity of mind. To achieve that equanimity of mind, I must consider every action as an offering, every result as a prasadam from God. Then only my mind can be in a state of samatvam. Samatvam yoga uchate. Now in verse number 49, 47 and 48, he spoke to us about the path of karma yoga. Verse 49, he is showing us the other side, those who don't follow the path of karma yoga. What is the nature of that person? So here he says in verse number 49, Durena avaram, far inferior. Durena means is far. Avaram is inferior. What is inferior? You have to see the last line. The last line of verse 49. The last word. Phala hetava. Phala hetava means one who only does action for the result of the action. Phala hetava. His only consideration is there anything for me? Then I will do the action. Whereas the karma yogi is, I will do action as long as it's my duty, and I have to do it as a duty, I will do it. But to the other person, I will only look at the result and then I will determine whether I want to do the action or not. So phalahetava is one who is only interested in the outcome of the action. And Krishna calls such people who are only interested in the outcome of the action, in the fourth line again, if you see the word kripana. Kripana here is translated as wretched, but it has another meaning also. Kripana actually means a miser. So what is the nature of a miser? What is the nature of a miser? Hoards. Hoards, whatever he has, right? He may be rich, but he, normally only rich people are misers. Poor people cannot be misers, isn't it? So whatever, nothing to hold on. So what is the nature of a miser is that selfishness, isn't it? I have more than what I can consume, but I don't want to share. That means what? My attitude to life is very narrow-minded. I have a very narrow-minded attitude to life. Whereas a karma yogi's life is what? Whatever I have, I want to share. Right? Even whatever little I have also, I want to share. I want to help others also. But a kripana, a miser, is one who is very narrow-minded. He may have everything, all the resources, but he doesn't want to share. Yet, when he looks at every action, he wants to know what is his benefit. I want to know what is my benefit. Today I was told by one lady, she said she used to do Shiva at a temple. And she told me, this was in Bangkok, in Thailand, she used to do Shiva. And she had the job of opening the donation box. And you know, people come, they put 1 ringgit, 2 ringgit, 5 ringgit. So she said one day a gentleman came, he wrote a check and he was trying to put the check, but unfortunately the slot was too thin, so the check got stuck. Anyway, he put the check and he walked away. And next day she came, she saw the check, she opened and looked at it, $100,000, which is almost about 10,000 ringgit here. So somebody like that quietly coming, putting the money and walking away. But there are others who whatever they have, so little bit also they don't want to give. So this miserly attitude, Krishna says, is that of that person who is only interested in the outcome of the result before I perform my actions. And this miserly attitude, Krishna says, is not conducive to our spiritual growth, to have this miserly attitude. So what we should do here, he says in the third line, buddhi yoga dhanam jaya. Now he compares karma yoga to buddhi yoga. How does karma yoga become buddhi yoga? Karma yoga is the path of selfless action. But we must understand that what is the actual definition of selfless action? Selfless action deals with not the action but the attitude to action, isn't it? So we can be doing a lot of good action. I can be going and doing seva, I can be giving a lot of charity, but as long as my mind expects a result, is that karma yoga or not karma yoga? Not karma yoga. So what he says is, understand first, what is karma yoga? Karma yoga is not simply doing good actions. It means correcting your attitude to your action. So that's why he calls karma yoga is buddhi yoga. You must first understand what is the definition of karma yoga and then apply it to your life. So here he gives the final, what you call, not final, he gives the advice to Krishna, to Arjuna. Buddhau saranam anvicha. Anvicha means, saranam means to take shelter. Take shelter under your intellect. Don't simply keep on doing action and think you're doing a lot of good things. Think carefully before you are doing every action. You must first correct your attitude. So, having the right attitude is very, very important. And if we look at it, earlier he also said that it is the actions that, wrong actions that bind us. When we do actions with the wrong attitude, That is when we get bound. So here he will explain in the next verse what does it mean, this Buddhi Yoga. So if you look at verse number there's something else I forgot to mention. Okay, so this attitude of Karma Yoga, if you look at it, when we acquire the right knowledge and perform our actions, very important to note here, what is the difference? You see, one is the person who is following, who is only looking at the results of the action and then doing action. That we call a karmi. In Sanskrit, it's called a karmi, K-A-R-M-I. One who does actions to get the results of the action. One who does actions with surrendering the results to God is called a karma yogi. So what is the difference between a karmi and a karma yogi? Both are doing same action. What is the difference? Both are giving charity. Both are doing seva. One with desire for results, one who has surrendered the results to God. What is the difference? The difference is not in the action. So, attitude. So, what is the end result of that?
The karmi will be bound by
one simple question you ask yourself. Whenever we do action, when do we want to be happy? You want happiness now or you want happiness later? When do you want to be happy, now or later? Today or tomorrow? Everybody wants happiness now.
Today and tomorrow.
But a person doing action, a karmi doing action, where is his happiness? In the
result,
isn't it? He's not happy doing the action. He's happy in the result. But when do you want happiness? Now. But when are you going to get the happiness?
Later.
So, possibly. That also, whether it happens according to what you want or not according to what you want. So, you want happiness now, but you are more interested in the result. So, you have postponed your happiness to the future. Whereas a karma yogi finds happiness in the action itself. So a karma yogi works from happiness, a karmi works for happiness. That is the difference. A karmi works for happiness, a karma yogi works from happiness. He is already happy to surrender the actions to God. He finds joy in the work itself. Whereas a karmi does not find the joy in the work because all the time he is thinking of the result. So you yourself have postponed your own happiness to the future. Until the result happens, your mind is not going to be happy. So that's why Krishna calls it as Buddhi Yoga. Understand to find the joy in the action. Because you have no ultimate control over the result, surrender the result to God. Find the joy itself in the action. And in verse number 50, he gives some more definition of Karma Yoga here. Here he says, what is the result of having this attitude in all your actions? Buddhi Yuktaha. Buddhi Yuktaha means using this knowledge, the Buddhi. Yuktaha, be firmly established in this knowledge. Follow this philosophy of Karma Yoga. If you follow this philosophy of Karma Yoga, what happens? Sukrita Duskrite. Sukha, favorable. Dukha, unfavorable reactions will not happen. You see, just think about it. When I have an expectation, okay? Let's say I expect the result to come out this way. So I have an expectation. When I do the action and it turns out according to my expectation, what happens? Because you had an expectation, you did the action, it came out according to what you expected, what happens? you are happy. This happiness, that is one reaction. If I had a expectation and I do the action and it comes out not according to what I expected, then what happens? There is unhappiness. There is some agitation. What we don't realize, this happiness that we have, which we are unable to control, we are so happy that we got this, or that agitation, do you know what happens to that when that happens in your mind? If you are unable to control, either you are very happy or you are very dejected. You become aggravated. Do you know what happens now? It is happening where? In your mind. So, what is, do you know what has happened now? If you plant a seed, what will you get? If you plant a mango seed, what will you get? Mango. If you plant that extreme happiness in your mind, the joy in your mind that you derive from that action, it is what we call vasana. Or if you are dejected, the result didn't come out as you wanted, it is also like planting a seed in your mind. You get depressed, agitated, angry. Now what happens? This becomes part of your subconscious. Now think, when I do the same action again, because when I did it first time, it gave me the result I wanted. The second time I do the action, expecting the same happiness, what happens when it doesn't happen? Now again you become rejected. Because you yourself laid the seed of that action in your mind. And if the result did not go according to what I wanted and you became angry, agitated, etc., what do you think that anger and agitation will happen to that? It has to come out somewhere also. So either way, we must understand, when we expect a result, if it's favorable, it plants a seed in our mind because we expect it to happen again. And if it is unfavorable, we get agitated, it is also planting a seed in our mind. This seed is what we call the vasanas. And if you think it is okay, it is in my mind, then you should go and refer to chapter 8 verse 6. And you look at chapter 8 verse 6, you will understand more better. That is on page 152. Chapter 8 verse 6, page 152. So here Krishna is advising us. He says, at time of death, whosoever the person thinks of, that alone he attains, for being ever absorbed in that thought. Now this is only a time of death. But think very carefully, if you continuously go on through this life of happiness, agitation, you keep on planting these seeds in your life. If you have so much of desires for something, this desires are going to determine your next birth, your next action. So, don't think that at the end of my life, I can lead a wrong life and then at the end, I just pray to God and I go to God. Because at the end of our life, the last thought is the accumulation of how we lived our life. That is what is going to be our last thought. If I have continuous desires for something, always have desires, then my mind is only going to think about that. And that is how our life is going. If we allow, now we are in control of our desires. When you allow your desires to go on and on and on, then what happens? It is like the seed that is planted in our mind. Eventually you find what? You cannot control the desire. What happens? The desire is controlling you. So that is what he's saying. If you live a life of karma yoga, where you surrender the results to God, neither is there any over-excitement, neither is there agitation. So there is no seed planted in your mind. There is no more agitation. But whereas if you keep on expecting the results of your action, either you get uplifted or you get dejected. And this plants a seed in your mind. So sukrita duskrite means there is no good or evil. Because this thoughts are those which will lead to your future life, your future birth also. So he says, devote your life to karma yoga, tasmat yogaya yujasva. And he gives another beautiful definition to Karma Yoga in the last line of verse 50, Yoga Karmashu Kaushalam. Yoga is skill in action. Now, what do we mean by skill in action? As explained, two people doing the same action, one person has expectation of results, the result binds him through unnecessary happiness or through dejection. Another person doing the same action is not bound. So what has happened? Same action, two different results. Now, if you look at it this way, you know, when you go to the temple, you see Lord Shiva, he's got a snake around his neck, isn't it? Do you know why he's got a snake around his neck? Lord Shiva has a snake right around his neck. Why does he keep a snake around his neck? It's a message, it's a symbol. What is that symbolism telling us?
Fix our negative.
Our negative action he accepts. What is the representation of the snake around Lord Shiva's neck? Would you take a snake and put around your neck?
No,
no way. So why does he put a snake around his neck? See, everything in the temple is speaking to us in the language of symbolism. We have to understand it. Why does Shiva put a snake around his neck? What?
Subdue
your?
Latent.
Your subdue your work.
Your latent
desires. See, the snake is worn as an ornament, isn't it? To one who understands how to handle a snake, he can wear it as an ornament. It does not bite him. He does not create any fear. But to one who doesn't know how to handle a snake, the snake becomes a source of danger, isn't it? Similarly, if you look at action, if you know how to handle the action, then that action becomes a source of joy for you, right? Otherwise, we go to office the whole week, we work, and then what we are looking forward to? Thank God it's Friday, isn't it? Because work becomes a chore. It becomes a burden for us if we do not know how to handle that action. And then if we cannot handle it, what we do? We go away on holiday. Why do we go on holiday? Work is stressful, life is stressful, spouse is stressful, neighbor is stressful, children are stressful. So I run away from stress to go on holiday. But then you have to come back again. So you can run away physically from everything. One thing you cannot run away from. The mind you cannot run away. If you do not know how to take care of this, then you have big problem to handle your own body also. So, what is the symbolism of the snake? If you look at snake poison can be used two ways. One, if the snake bites you, it can be deadly, it can kill you. Then the second way, he can also become an antidote. The same poison can kill you. The same poison, if you know how to convert it, becomes an antidote, a saver. Meaning what? Same action, same karma. A karma yogi knows how to handle it by surrendering the result to God. That action becomes an antidote. It does not create any disturbance. Another person does not know how to handle action, goes through action, agitation, frustration, anger, etc. That same action causes a poison to him. So that's why he calls yoga karmashu kaushalam. Yoga is skill in action. Yoga is knowing how to take the same action and converting it to an antidote. One who doesn't know will take the same action and convert it into poison. So that's why yoga is karmashu kaushalam. Now here up to verse number 50, he has completed the discussion about karma yoga. So later on in verse 54, Arjuna is going to ask one very important question. Okay, what is the question he's going to ask? Is all of us are interested to know this. You say I've been coming for all the Gita lectures, so you tell me about karma yoga, you tell me about jnana yoga, but what do I want to know? I've sat here, I've listened to you for 10 weeks, isn't it? You told me about karma yoga, okay, I accept. You tell me jnana yoga, I accept. What is it you want to know now? What do you want to know? Why you come for Gita classes? You don't just come to hear me, you don't just come to listen to all the verses and then go and impress your friends, you know, I can quote from the Gita left and right and all. What is the most important thing you want to know? How is there going to be a transformation in my life, isn't it? Now I am in this state of confusion, I've got problems in my mind, I cannot handle this, I cannot handle that. Okay, you say karma yoga follow, jnana yoga follow, all this agitation all will remove. I want to know what will be the transformation in me. Because all this I'm giving you now is called what? Information. Right? Information must lead to transformation. If information doesn't lead to transformation, you only store all the knowledge here, what does your mind become?
Computer.
Worse than computer. You know what? Where do you store books? Your mind becomes a library. Only is used for storage of information. But it must cause a change in your life. So what is Arjuna going to ask a very critical question? Krishna, if I follow this path of karma yoga, if I follow this path of jnana yoga, what is the transformation? And how do I know that I am being transformed? I must have some qualities, isn't it? I must know how to assess myself, not assess others. How to assess myself? Am I progressing? I am following this path of karma yoga. I am following this path of jnana yoga. How do I know if I am progressing? And how do I know that is the highest situation I can attain? So the word used there by Arjuna is called sthita prajna. He says sthita prajna ka bhasha. How does this sthita prajna, prajna means knowledge, sthita means when this knowledge is firmly established in me, how, what kind of transformation will it cause in me? Can you please tell me the marks of a sthita prajna? Give me the characteristics of a sthita prajna. So once I know the characteristics, I know, am I getting closer there or am I moving far away? So knowledge has got to be practical, otherwise it is of no use. It becomes information, it does not lead to transformation. You had a question. You had a question? No. No, I thought you put up your hand. No. Okay. So that is the important critical point we are coming to. And in the last 18 verses, when Arjuna asked this question in verse 54, sorry, in verse 54, yes. The last 18 verses, 55 to 72, Krishna explains about this sthita prajna. He will explain two important things. One is, what are the marks of a God-realized soul? Number one, that is the question that Arjuna asks. And number two, what are the practices that we must put into effect in order to become a sthita prajna? So these two questions will be answered. So up to now, verse 50, he has finished his explanation about jnana yoga and karma yoga. Now in these three verses, 51, 52, 53, he sums up what he discussed earlier. And then Arjuna will ask a question in 54, and then he will explain about this sthita prajna in the closing 18 verses. Okay, so let us look at verse number 51. Okay. Here, 51, 52, 53 is summarizing the growth that he has explained about in karma yoga and jnana yoga. So here in 51, he says, buddhi yukta. Buddhi yukta means to have this proper attitude in life. Equipping ourselves with this right knowledge is a buddhi yukta. And what is the proper knowledge? To a spiritual aspirant, what is the proper knowledge? what is the right understanding we should have? If I am a spiritual person, what is the right understanding I should have in my mind first? Put into practice
with the right attitude.
Correct, but what is the firm understanding that I should have? Buddhi yukta, okay, let me put it this way. What are the values that I should have, the goals in my life? I should have a goal in life. What should be my goal in life as a spiritual person? Everybody want moksha very fast. Everybody want moksha. And I won't have any more students. Everybody want moksha. See, the scriptures tell us we have, as human beings, we have four goals. We know that karma, desires, we have to pursue. We cannot, scriptures don't say, don't go and suppress all your desires. No, I have desire to study. I have desire to help people. I have desire to give charity. Go ahead. Karma is important. Artha, in order to satisfy desires, I need money, right? So artha also is important. To run my household, I need money. Then there is dharma, that is righteous action and all kinds of prayers and rituals. And there is moksha. Moksha is the ultimate goal. But it doesn't mean that I don't need karma and artha. But to a spiritual person, what is my primary goal in life? Dharma and moksha. What is my secondary goal in life? Artha and karma. Therefore, every action that I do, what is my first motive? What is my primary motive? Every action should put me on the path of dharma and moksha. I also work for karma and artha, but if I do any action that violates dharma and takes me away from moksha but gives me a lot of karma and artha, would I do it? No. If I am a spiritual person, I will earn money legitimately, I will spend money legitimately, I will work hard for my money and for my pleasure, but I will not violate dharma. Because the more and more I violate dharma, I may get a lot of money and pleasure, but what happens to my spiritual goal? I go further and further and further away. So first of all, in our mind, we must be very clear that every action I'm doing is for dharma and for moksha. Therefore, when your goal is dharma and moksha, and you do all kinds of hard work, you go and work hard, you do business, this, etc., etc., you may or may not get success in business. You may or may not get much wealth. But what is your primary goal in life? Dharma and moksha. So, whether there is material growth, how much material growth there is, that is not your primary concern. My primary concern is, if my goal is dharma, moksha, my primary concern is, through all my actions, I must find purity of mind. So that is my first objective through all my action. So that's why Krishna says buddhi yukta. In fact, if we look at the celebration of Navaratri, 9 days celebration, we worship the female form of goddess in three different aspects. So the first 3 days, who do we worship?
Durga.
Durga represents, what does Durga represent? Desires? What else besides desires? Durga also represents health and strength. That health also we need. We need a healthy body. We need strength also to carry out all our work. So first we worship Durga, 3 days. Then the next 3 days we worship Lakshmi. Lakshmi represents
wealth.
So wealth also we need. So health we need, strength we need, wealth also we need. And finally we worship Saraswati, which is knowledge. So again, if you look at our religion, it does not say don't pursue karma artha. We need Kamartha. We worship all the three goddesses who represent health, strength, who represent wealth, and who represent knowledge. So all three also. But most important is to keep a balance on material growth, balance on spiritual growth also. That is very important. Right? Or best, of course, we can give more priority to spiritual growth also. But when you give priority to material growth, then your spiritual growth gets pushed aside. In fact, I remember one family, I was taking a class somewhere, and this family, amazing family, they used to come for my classes, and first the wife came, then she pulled a daughter pulled a fiancé, fiancé pulled, daughter pulled a brother, then all of them pulled the father, and then five of them were coming for the classes. So, one day, we used to have these classes twice a month. And they became so engrossed, so much involved in this knowledge, they used to make it a point to come, all four or five of them to come for the every class. So one day, it was Chinese New Year, and the classes were on Sunday we used to do. But because of Chinese New Year, we decided to have an extra class, it was a Friday. This family was supposed to go outstation to attend a wedding somewhere. And they planned to leave at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Friday to beat all the Chinese New Year traffic. So since we decided to hold the class in the morning at 9 o'clock, they were not very happy. So I said, what do you want me to do? They said, okay, can you bring the class forward to 8 o'clock? So I said, why? They said, we will get ready, put all our luggage, everything in the car. We will drive to the class at 8 o'clock, attend the class to 9:30, and then drive to Taiping. And they did it. So they also took care of their material needs. At the same time, they did not want to miss, or they did not want to sacrifice their spiritual growth. And all five of them turned up. They came, they got ready in the early morning, they came for the class at 8 o'clock, finished 9:30, they all drove to Taiping. So this is what we call people who are really thirsting for knowledge, who are really interested in that spiritual goal, who will not sacrifice their material, the spiritual goal, just to get more material benefits. Right? That's why the dedication, the firmness is very important. So here Krishna says in verse number 51, Manishina, he calls such people in line number 2. You see Manishina. Manishina means those people who are introspective, who have a higher goals in life, who are not interested in the mundane goals or whatever the world can offer. Such people deserve to be called Manishina, meaning human beings. Because only human beings among all creation can have a goal in life. An animal cannot have a goal in life. A plant cannot have a goal in life. So we may have a human form, but do we have the human goal in life? The human goal in life, the scripture says, is moksha. So until you have this goal in life, then you become a manishina. You become a true human being. Whereas if your only goal is eating, sleeping, drinking, procreating, then what difference is your life against an animal life? So Manishina, here Krishna says, understanding the goal of a human life is an awakened person. And what is this Manishina? Janma Bandha Vinir Muktaha. Janma means birth. Bandha means the shackles. Shackles of birth. Vinir Muktaha means to be free from this cycle of birth and death. Right? So, what do we mean by that? It's a state of immortality. To reach this state of immortality, we have to break ourselves from these shackles of birth and death. Just as I said, every action, if you expect a result, it creates a seed in your mind. That seed is the cause of your next birth. You come back again, you live the same life, you have so many desires, those desires become a seed in your mind, it causes you the next birth again. So you go through the cycle of birth and death and birth and death again and again. And actually this, you may question, so what is wrong? I have desires. I satisfy my desires. I have more desires. I die. I come back again. I satisfy my desires, I die again, I come back again. What is wrong? Is it wrong?
Huh?
How you wasted a human birth?
Yeah,
but you say, so what? I'm enjoying my desires. I have so many desires. I buy a car, buy a house. I go on holidays. I don't care about my spiritual growth. I die. I come back again.
There's a chance you may go lower.
Right. So there is no guarantee that if you have only these base desires of eating, drinking, sleeping, that you may ever get back a human birth again. Secondly, when you have an opportunity for knowledge, it is not that every time you will get this opportunity. The reason why you have this opportunity for knowledge, do you know why? Do you know why all of you are here? Huh? What? It is because of your past karmas, because of the good deeds that you have built up, that this opportunity for knowledge has been given to you. So it is not available for everybody. It is not by chance or by accident that you walked into this class or anywhere, that wherever you go for knowledge. Understand, it is a build up of your past karmas. So whatever you have been doing in the past, you have been going in the right direction. And it is said in the Ramayana, when your thoughts are pure, when your intentions are good, do you know what happens? If you had good intentions in your heart, if your mind is pure, your mind is contemplating continuously on God, if you want to elevate yourself spiritually, do you know what happens? Do you know? God will bless you back with the knowledge. He will send the right people into your life to guide you also. That's why there are all the saints and sages around. They don't... See, understand one thing. In Mahabharata, people say, when will the Guru come? When will the Guru come? When will my Guru come? Everybody asks this question. How will I know who's my Guru? Now look at Mahabharata time. The greatest Guru was around, isn't it? Who was the greatest Guru? Lord Krishna. Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru, we say. He's the Guru of the Jagat. Yet he was there in Mahabharata time. Did Duryodhana listen to him? Did Bhishma Pita listen to him? Did Dronacharya listen to him? Guru was there or not there? So what is the problem then? We say, when will the Guru come? Guru came. But did you listen to the Guru? That means what? Those people who have already got the pure mind, who are ready, that Guru will come, you will recognize that Guru. Otherwise, if you are not ready, your mind is impure, the Guru can be sitting next to you also, you will push him away also. So, it is not when will the Guru come, it is when you are ready, the Guru will come. So understand that this is what the Ramayana says. It says, when your thoughts are pure, when your intentions are good, the opportunities will be created for you to receive this knowledge. Conditions will be ripened for you to receive this knowledge. So here also, to break out of these shackles of birth and death, if we walk the path of Karma Yoga with the right attitude to action, the conducive, the right conditions will be created for you to receive this knowledge. All we have to do is ensure we start properly on the journey. That's all. And where we okay, karma jam buddhi yuktahi phalam tyaktva manishina janma bandha vinirmuktaha padam gachantya anamayam. Padam means that place you will reach. The padam is a place you reach which is anamayam. Anamayam means free from dirt, free from defects, free from impurities. Understand, this is not moksha. This is only your mind has become pure to receive the knowledge. So if you perform action with the right attitude, the right conditions are created, the right environment is created, and your mind becomes pure, you are able to receive this knowledge. So that is what is explained in verse number 51. Now I will stop here, and okay, we just have to, you want to switch this off? Because I just need to discuss with you all whether you all want to carry on the class here, or has anybody got an alternative venue?
thing is, in this class, of course, we have to spend $40 every time we meet here.